The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, welcome. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our main floor bunker, everybody. Woohoo! We finally made it to the main floor.
That's right. We've moved on up to the east side of the house.
And that's why the sun is boiling into this room.
Yes. Today is April the 15th of 2012, the Ides of April. And we have
the Ides of IRS.
Yeah. Do you know where your tax money is? Actually, because it's falling on a Sunday this year, you get two extra days. Yeehaw. Use them wisely. But yes, we have moved the bunker from its downstairs room to our upstairs room. And we're happy to do so for a couple of reasons. First of all, we can, you know, get some more light, get a nice window there looking out over the
wooded area
across the street.
Yeah, we've got a full-size window in here now.
And
we don't
also
see feet going by.
That's true, which is kind of weird because I looked out the basement bunker window one Saturday morning while I was working on something there and saw deer legs standing in the mulch right outside the front of the house, which is something.
Deer legs. How are you doing today?
Something that never happened when I lived in Chicago as a kid.
No.
But that was really intriguing. Sam wasn't very happy about that, but
no, in fact, he chased them off. Get out of our ivy. Get off.
He says.
That's true.
They just kind of looked at him like, you're noisy. But it's because Sharon's sister Debbie has come to live with us. And mm-hmm.
She's becoming, and what are you if you live in Illinois? You're a Hoosier in Indiana. What are you in Illinois? Overtaxed?
There is that, yes, because we moved here last year just in time to have our income taxes increased by, 50% or something like that? Yeah, but I think it's called Illinoising.
Oh, yeah, you're an Illinoiser.
An equal opportunity Illinoiser.
Do I get to be Illinoisy?
And Sam's got that job filled.
He does. So. Well, anyway, we're really glad that you're with us today. You know what? Last weekend was Easter. And even though we've sort of been doing an every 2 week schedule, lighter schedule this year in 2012, we had announced earlier, if you had missed it, we announced earlier this year that honestly, we really didn't know if the Lord still wanted us to continue doing this after 7 years of it. Excuse me. But his answer was, yes, I want you to do it at least through the end of this year. That's the commitment I want you to make through the end of 2012. But, excuse me, I'm going to have to go get a glass of water here in a minute. We decided that we would take an easier schedule. So every 2 weeks, except this is 3 weeks now because of Easter. We took last weekend off. We were busy.
Yeah, we had the annual choir cantata, which we were part of. The week prior to that was... the week prior was the cantata.
Well,
then, of course, we had Resurrection Sunday last weekend.
Yes. And by the way, we do prefer to call it Resurrection Sunday, Easter being actually a different holiday for a different god.
Right.
Goddess.
But it's the one that most Western Christians know.
And that's how we know. So. You know, honestly, after our cantata last Sunday, as we were standing in the hallway wearing our choir robes. By the way, I'm not crazy about choir robes. But we were standing in the hallway, and the narthex, as they call it there, hallway. Mm-hmm. And people were passing by us, and I started out saying, Happy Resurrection, or Glorious Resurrection Sunday, or He is Risen, and got a lot of, odd looks, like, what? I wasn't expected to hear it. Don't say that to me. I don't know how to respond to that. So I just finally went to Happy Easter. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
So anyway, and then
no bunnies here though.
I was out of town the week prior, so that to kind of kind of.
Well, you were there, but you were out of town because you were doing your barbershop chorus due diligence.
Yeah, the spring convention and contest for the Illinois District of the Barbershop Harmony Society, and
you were learning your secret handshakes, weren't you?
Yes, our Little Chorus from Coles County placed second in the competition, which is the highest score, highest ranking it had ever received. Also received the highest score from the judges it ever received. So very proud to be part of that, not just because of doing well in the sight of the judges, but because the fellowship in the group is very close-knit. Our director of our chorus also happens to be the director of our church choir. Because the two competition songs we did were very honoring of the military. Mm-hmm. The songs were Something About a Soldier That Is Fine, and then a World War I era ballad, a real tearjerker, called If I'm Not at the Roll Call. And it was something that was intended to honor the men and women who wear the uniform.
We may not always agree with kinetic actions that our government
yes.
gets us involved in, but the men and women who serve, boy, you know what? You have our respect every
Absolutely.
Day, every minute.
And as it happened, one of the judges at the competition in the presentation category, which is how well you sell the message of the song through your movements and through your facial expressions, actually two of the judges, a presentation judge and the music category judge, were so moved by the presentation of that second song that they were choking up as they were giving us our evaluations an hour after the competition. Mm. So 90 minutes after they had seen us sing the song, they were choking up again. And as it happened, the presentation judge is U.S. Army Reserve, so he's had colleagues and comrades who were not at the roll call after a particular action, so it kind of hit close to home. Mm. Was proud to be a part of that, and I guess can lead to our opening salvo for this week's PID Radio as we look at where our next kinetic action might take place.
Well, I'm going to let you be in charge of the salvos, or the salvi, this afternoon, because honestly, I have taken a luxuriant 3-month vacation, mm-hmm. luxurious, and wonderful. It's been so restful. I've not been on Facebook. I've sort of peeked my head in the door every few weeks just to make sure I wasn't missing out on important emails or private messages, I guess is what they're called there. So I've really not been on the internet much. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine living without being on the internet?
It gives me hives just to think about it.
I know, honey, it does. I've been doing a lot of reading, and well, if we don't discuss it on this show, I'll be talking to you more about it. But I'll be back on Facebook as of this week, so if you have something you want to say to me, as long as it's polite, please send me a private message mm-hmm. on Facebook. And always look at our PID news wall, which you've been very busy posting to. At Facebook.
Yep, trying to get some stuff up there. So you can find, as is the case with every program, the links to many of the news articles we discuss on the program at our at facebook.com/PID News.
Right,
we
but
now
I
have
do.
That,
I'm sorry.
No, that we've got now that address, which is a little easier to repeat and remember.
Rather than, no, a little bit.
Yeah, just go, do
number,
a search.
Number, number, letter, letter, letter.
Exactly. Just, yeah, do a search. No, it's facebook.com/PID News.
It's pretty easy. Also at PIDnews.com, even though we are not writing individual articles there every day, we occasionally do. But for the most part, take a look there each day because we have a news feed up there that we've tailored to the kind of news that we like to look at and we're interested in finding. So, I'd say every morning, just take a peek at PIDnews.com and then head on over to Facebook and the PID News wall.
Mm-hmm. So, as always seems to be the case, and you commented on this over the last few weeks, it seems like the same news stories just keep recycling.
I'm telling
every
you,
couple
about
of years.
Every about 2 or 3 years, you'll see the same. Well, Kim Jong Il is no longer around. Kim Jong Un
right.
is busy trying to be a bigger guy than his dad was.
Right,
and shooting off his rockets.
Yeah, and Freudian psychologists would have a field day with that. But the
especially since it broke up.
Exactly, test of a nuclear nuclear vehicle for the North Koreans broke up before it exited the atmosphere. Japan had threatened to shoot it down if they launched the missile. Nobody is claiming that that's actually what happened, but I think it's interesting that the missile was launched this past week and it failed to make it into orbit, which is a good thing. much as anyone, the Chinese, frankly, might have had an interest in sabotaging this particular
missile. You know, it's funny you should say that, because that occurred to me as well, mm-hmm. is Kim Jong-un the man that they would have chosen to take mm-hmm. over? Is he someone they feel comfortable controlling?
Yeah. I felt for a long time that North Korea is just China's junkyard dog that mm-hmm. Barks and raises a racket. And as we commented every couple of years, and you made a kind of a tongue-in-cheek poster for Kim Jong-il, Kim Jong-zilla, in which she superimposed his magnificent hairstyle on top of a movie poster of Godzilla. But it seems like every time the news cycle gets slow or North Korea is out of the news for a while, Kim Jong-il and now his son Kim Jong-un go ahead and do something to get the attention of the world media. This also is at a time when celebrations in North Korea have begun to honor the 100th anniversary of the birth of the founder of the North Korean state, who was Kim Jong-il's father. And, of course, I don't remember his name now. But I thought it was kind of interesting that it's the 100th. He was actually born in August, but they've begun the celebrations several months early. I thought it was ironic that they were beginning the celebrations for
Kim Il-sung.
Kim Il-sung. Okay. At the same time as we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. So,
yes, Kim Il-sung.
Yeah.
Of course, the last name being Kim. So
right. The surname in Asian nations is first, and the given name or Christian name, as we would call it in the West, is the it follows. So Kim is actually his family name, surname. So anyway, that was again part and parcel of the 100th anniversary of the founder of the North Korean state. And of course, there's more news coming out of Syria and reports of cross border raids. The Syrians shelling Homs again, the Turks being encouraged by Western allies to use military force, at least in a limited way, to in northern Syria.
How many deaths have there been in Syria since the
that's a good question.
Protests started? The reason I ask that is because I was watching Jack Van Impe this morning before while waiting for everyone else. I thought I was the only one who was ready to go, and of course Debbie was ready to go downstairs, and she
was ready to go
in
here. Yeah,
you were ready to go here, and you were waiting for us. We were all waiting for Guffman. He never showed up. But while I was doing that, I was watching Jack Van Impe, which honestly, I know he gets lampooned a lot, but he and his wife Rexella, they really do bring out a lot of the news that you and I talk about. Mm-hmm. And he made the statement that there had been 10,000 or 15,000 deaths, and that sounded high to me.
Well, according to various sources, including the United Nations, anywhere between 10,000 and 13,000 people have been killed.
13, eh?
Yeah, yeah. Many more have been injured. Tens of thousands of protesters imprisoned, according to the Syrian government. The death toll is around 7,500, including about 3,000 members of their security forces. So
it really, as with most historical data, depends on who you ask.
And
whom you ask.
Exactly. It's hard to know, as with information coming out of Iran, what information is accurate, and because each side has a vested interest in getting the world to accept its version of the truth. And I'm not by any means suggesting that Bashar al-Assad is a nice guy who you'd want to have over for dinner, but well, let's point back to the movie Syriana again.
Yes.
Which was based on the book by the former mm-hmm. CIA agent Robert Baer. That was the movie that starred George Clooney and Matt Damon and a number of other folks. Yeah, it's a little bit. I think you're hearing the fan from the Mac down below.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
New
room, different sounds.
Yeah,
yes.
I thought, okay, because we've had tornadoes in the Midwest, of them, over 140 of them yesterday. And today we're getting similar types of storms that are coming in. And so I thought maybe it was the siren.
We're expecting that in about 5 or 6 hours, that the weather is supposed to reach our part of Illinois. So anyway, watch Syriana if you've not yet, just to see how the news media can be used to spin a certain version of the truth.
Syriana, and watch Wag the Dog.
And Wag the Dog is a more extreme example, of course. And then bear in mind that anything that we see coming from these corners of the world where we're told that we need to go in and what's the doctrine that the Obama administration has used to justify our intervention in Libya, a responsibility to protect?
Oh, yes.
I talked with Carl Tykrib of ForcingChange.org about that. It's a doctrine that says that if people, if a nation is engaging in abuses or atrocities against its own people, the world has a responsibility to protect. And in fact, there's a website I found. It's responsibilitytoprotect.org. R2P is the clever acronym. It's a new international security and human rights norm to address the international community's failure to protect those who cannot protect themselves. This is the justification that the one world government will ultimately use to create an international security force. And this is what Carl Tykrib was talking about in the last interview we did on The View from the Bunker. That is the doctrine that will be used to justify if we do send forces to intervene in Syria. That's the doctrine. That's how they'll justify it. We have a responsibility to protect the helpless in Syria, in South Sudan, in Somalia, or wherever else we choose to intervene.
Anywhere that we want to go shopping, I mean, yoink.
Yeah, I think you have hit it on the head.
And by shopping, I mean if they have minerals or any other wealth that exists within that nation's borders,
right.
We have a responsibility to protect our stuff.
Now, the thing I don't understand is what exactly Syria has that makes them worth getting, other than the fact that they are belligerent.
Strategically located.
Well, yes, they're belligerent to against Israel. And
there goes Sam.
It's another one of those dominoes that for some reason we appear ready to knock over in that part of the world. And the ultimate goal being Iran,
that's
to
true.
Persia.
But you also mentioned something, many shows back about Saudi Arabia's desire to take over that part of the world and make themselves into a much larger empire.
There was there was speculation on the part of analysts, and I believe this was at Debka.com, that the Saudis, who appear to be sending arms to rebels in Syria, the part of Syria bordering on western Iraq, in order to carve out Anbar province, which is the western province of Iraq, and the eastern portion of Syria to create, a new kingdom, or at least a new addition to the Saudi empire. Because of the religious and tribal affiliations, I guess that was the word.
But wasn't Syria part of the old Persian Empire?
Well, yeah, the old Persian. Well, yeah,
I mean the one that goes back to.
Or are you talking about the Ottoman Empire?
No, not the Ottoman Empire. The old, back in the days of the Medo-Persian Empire.
I think the Medo-Persian Empire included most of the ancient Middle East.
And even Turkey as well, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the Prince of Persia again.
Well, could be. Again, bear in mind, Persia is Shia, and the Saudis are Sunni.
Yes.
Although that doesn't necessarily mean anything in the grand scheme of things. Yeah, the Persian Empire included all of Turkey, Syria.
It's whoever
Israel,
can get the prized plum first
gets
to be the leader of the world. It's like these countries, or even the spirits behind them, are playing a big game of Risk.
Yeah. And you're referring, of course, to the board game. If you're not familiar with the board game Risk, do a quick Google search on that and you'll see what
maybe
it is.
Maybe they were too old.
Yeah.
The people under 30 are going, what?
Well, yeah. We used to play that in college. We'd play double board Risk.
Board games?
I know exactly what you're saying. And you may be right. And again, the old Persian Empire extended from Turkey through all of modern Afghanistan and to parts of northwest India. What it did not include was the Arabian Desert. In other words, the heart of the Saudi kingdom today.
Who was the first one? Cyrus the Great? Was he the first one? Okay, sorry.
I would think so, yeah. Yeah, I think so. So, yeah, it...
There's a wonderful documentary that I watched recently. This is where this is coming from. In case people are going, what is she smoking? It's because, and I don't smoke at all. It's because I saw a documentary about ancient Iran, the unknown history of ancient Iran. And I can find the exact title of the documentary. I watched it through Netflix streaming. Mm-hmm. It was really good. And it went all the way back to the rise of the heyday, you know, of the Persian Empire, mm-hmm. and explained from their viewpoint, you know, what it was like for their to rise to world domination, so to speak. Because honestly, back then they were the world. It was like the Antichrist, you know, way back then, and it was the Prince of Persia, the spirit, who was behind all of this. And that's why I asked, was it the Prince of Persia who's trying to really take over before whatever spirit might be behind the Saudis, mm-hmm. this other sect of Mohammedanism, mm-hmm. that they somebody's trying to get it first. Syria must have some spiritual interest, and it may have something to do with the doom about Damascus becoming essentially gone, just completely destroyed. It's the oldest continually occupied city in the world. And yet the Lord says he will take it out. It will cease to be.
You know, it could be that this goes even farther back, that this could be an attempt to re-establish the ancient kingdom of Nimrod.
Oh, now there you go. Talk about the ancient Antichrist.
Yeah. Yeah, Cyrus the Great in the... 6th century BC was the founder of the first, the first Persian Empire, when he defeated the Median Confederation. It was probably the mainstream Median Confederation.
but when you
go back even farther, Nimrod basically ruled roughly the same geographic area, with its center on mm-hmm. Assyria. Assyria, not Syria, but of course Syria would include part of that.
Right.
And there was a really interesting archaeological discovery that we talked about a couple of years ago, a city called Hamukar, Hamoukar.
Oh, I think that was more than a couple of years ago. I think that was early on.
Could be.
But is that the one that was discovered with the satellite imagery?
No. This was one where archaeologists found what appeared to be the use of bullets back in the during a war, which would have they dated to about 2500 or 3000 BC. They were clay and, mm-hmm. and fired with slings, but it would have dated roughly to the period of time that Nimrod was establishing his kingdom. And so, you know, interesting speculation and nothing more than that. This town, by the way, located in the very northeastern tip of Syria. As you look at a map there, there's a little finger in the very northeastern tip of Syria that borders on Iraq, and that's where Hamukar is located. So this would have been within the range of territory that Nimrod supposedly ruled. And it's just interesting speculation to wonder, was this a town that Nimrod conquered as he was going about and, spreading democracy?
The right to protect.
Yeah, in the third millennium BC. So... Just an interesting thought.
There's nothing new under the sun.
No, that is true. That is true. Speaking of responsibility to protect, one of the deployments of American troops that we've talked about over the last few months is it was President Obama's order sending U.S. Special Forces to Uganda to chase after the Lord's Resistance Army, headed up by Joseph Kony.
Yes.
And, of course, the group Invisible Children was in the news recently when the head of the organization was arrested in San Diego after running about nude and engaging in very bizarre behavior.
Yes.
This is the group that...
Bizarre is being kind, based on what I read.
Yeah. You can look it up. Kony 2012 was a movie that they put out there, which allegedly received over 1 million views on YouTube.
No, it was more than that. It was something like 88 million views.
Some ridiculous number,
yeah.
Which I believe is inflated because, frankly, mm-hmm. most people have never heard of the Lord's Resistance Army or Joseph Kony, and I just don't see any reason that people would be compelled to watch that video, especially to give it that many page views.
No.
Yeah. I mean, the kind of thing most of us are drawn to on YouTube are, you know, cute kittens and dancing babies and, yes, running dachshunds and things like that. This is a very heavy documentary, which has been criticized for some inaccuracies. They released a follow-up video last week, Beyond Kony.
Oh.
But at the same time as this was put out, comes word from a website called Black Star News, which claims to be New York's leading investigative newspaper, blackstarnews.com, citing released cables posted by WikiLeaks that the group Invisible Children was actually providing intelligence to Uganda's security apparatus, which led to arrests of political opponents of President Museveni.
Hmm.
How interesting.
Well, not surprised.
Yeah. And the memos that were published also document that U.S. officials were aware of the government of Uganda's campaign or campaigns to demonize opponents of its military by linking them to the Lord's Resistance Army. So there'll be a link to this article in the show notes at PIDradio.com once you hear this. So, again, it gets back to the earlier comment. Just be careful of what you see, read, hear. Because the news, once it makes it to your television set, your newspaper, your laptop has been filtered mm-hmm. through some kind of a filter.
Oh, do you remember the little song
Even
that the little kids
filtered.
Read?
Yes, through our own filters. And we
yes.
have our own sets of biases and prejudices.
Well, we do. That is absolutely true.
Yes.
We're going to present, you know, in fact, we're going to invite guests on to your VFTB show
mm-hmm.
that we choose because we feel that they are a good fit with our show. That's true of any radio show that when I, back in the day, back in Tickety 2, when I was trying to promote the Winds of Evil, when my publisher wanted me to promote, you know, I've never really felt compelled to do that. Look, that's another thing. But lots of times I would talk to these producers or I would email these producers and they would write back, I'm sorry, we're really just not interested in that. You're just not a good fit for the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. So there is an editorial slant to anything that you consume as news. And it's always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think... In fact, I did a very interesting interview back in 2007 when we were still in Columbia on the radio station there with a gentleman who'd written a book about the history of media during the Civil War and the contrasting reporting on the Civil War, a northern newspaper and a newspaper from Charleston, South Carolina. And I've done some reading, too, on the history of the War of 1812 and how it was reported in various newspapers. The news media has always been biased toward one viewpoint or another. For some reason, we Americans have this idea that the news is supposed to be objective. And I don't know if Edward R. Murrow was responsible for getting us to buy into this meme or who. But the news media has always been biased. That's why you've got all these newspapers out here in small communities like, in Shelbyville, Indiana. The newspaper was the Shelbyville News, but it resulted from the merger of two newspapers that dated back to the 1860s, 1870s in Shelbyville, the Shelbyville Republican mm-hmm. and the Shelbyville Democrat.
Oh, and that was true of many, many small
exactly.
towns, maybe even large town
yes.
papers. That's true, but there's also a secondary, if not a tertiary, filter that takes place because you and I and many of our people listening only listen to certain shows.
Yes.
We only read
yes.
certain articles.
Right. And that is something that we need to be aware of in ourselves, that we tend to consume opinions that agree with our own. We don't like reading or listening to or viewing commentators or reporters whose viewpoints are clearly different from our own. And so if we're not careful, we can wind up reinforcing our own preconceptions, mm-hmm. Which is why we try to read some different sources that we don't agree with.
Well, it's one of the reasons, honestly, that I just finished reading the third book in the Peter Lavenda
collection, the Sinister Forces.
Sinister Forces mm-hmm. trilogy. He is not a Christian, and it would be he doesn't write from a Christian perspective, but he writes from a perspective that, Lord love him, he's almost there.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have, you know, we've chatted with him off the air. We've emailed him back and forth, and he, for whatever reason, he simply does not want to become a believer. He doesn't see himself in that way, and he doesn't see God in the way you and I do. But he, by painting the spiritual picture that's going on behind the political choices and even many of the murders that are taking place in the United States, he sees that there's a spiritual component. He really does see what's behind that curtain. He just doesn't quite get the reason that it's behind the curtain.
Right.
But that, you know, that's just an example of one of the things that, that I choose to read him because it's a non-Christian point of view. But he's making really, really good observations. You know, that don't have to read just Christians.
No, and sometimes non-Christians are more honest and accurate in their criticism and assessment of modern day churchianity in America than we Christians are.
It's uncomfortable.
Yes.
It's not fun to read, but you really do. You know, it's like I love going into the kitchen without my glasses on. Because when I go into the kitchen without my glasses on, or I look in the mirror without my glasses on, the world has sort of a fuzzy look to it, and the kitchen looks really clean, and I look really young, and my makeup looks perfect, and then I go into the kitchen with my glasses on because I'm reading something else, and I'm startled by the dirt that's on the counters that I missed without my glasses, and I'm startled by, you know, like my lip liner is not quite where it ought to be on my makeup. So I think it's really important that we be willing to look at ourselves, the churchianity, at the church itself, and be willing to acknowledge that maybe we're not quite the, you know, according to the plumb line, and that's Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Maybe we're not walking right on that road the way we're supposed to.
We need to be ready to discern and accept information from sources that don't necessarily agree with us and aren't necessarily Christian. Doesn't just because they're not Christian doesn't necessarily mean they're wrong. 100%. It requires having to think. And I believe Jesus called us to that when he said that when he was asked which was the most important commandment, and he said, love your neighbor as you love yourself, and the second's like the first, love the Lord your God with all of your heart.
No, you switched him.
Love the Lord. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart and
soul and mind.
So, you know, it does require having to think and examine, you know, are my...
It really does, because we're more comfortable with that list of rules.
Yes, because it doesn't require having to think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No dancing? Okay, I can handle that.
Yeah.
But thinking about how am I going to respond to the guy who just cut me off on the interstate in a way that's consistent with my Christian beliefs, that requires...
Without sign language.
Perhaps having to change the way I would normally respond. Or if somebody posts something to the internet or posts a comment, for example, to PIDradio.com, having to think about a response and pray about it rather than my normal reaction, which was to go into, you know, debate team captain mode and perhaps be more reactive than loving. And so anyway, we're kind of drifting far off.
We really are. We haven't even gotten to your salvos yet, or salvi.
Well, we've worked a number of them in.
Have we? Sort
of, yes, which is very subtile. Yes.
To them,
here's another area of the world to keep an eye on, by the way, as we watch the drums of war beating toward... Oh, by the way, we talk about stories that keep cycling around again. We're cycling around again and hearing, you know, Iran is dangerous and we need to arm Israel and prepare for war.
That's because we've got an election coming up. That he really does need to have a war going.
It would certainly help his chances, President Obama, that is. United States has started issuing some interesting comments about Baluchistan, which is the wild tribal area of western Pakistan where terrorists are supposedly holed up, and every now and then we hear about a drone that has gone in and smashed a potential terrorist cell there. In January of this year, the Department of State of the United States expressed concern at human rights situation in Baluchistan. The government there has been fighting secessionist insurgents for years. Baluchistan when the territory was divvied up after World War II, were hoping to become part of India. Apparently, they have more cultural ties to India mm-hmm. than they do Pakistan, but geographically, they're a better fit with Pakistan. The people who live there, the Baloch, are thought to be of Persian origin mainly. So again, this is southwest Pakistan and southeast Iran. They kind of cross over the border there. Mostly desert, mountain terrain. It's the largest province in Pakistan. Covers about 44% of the country's area there. And it seems that while Pakistan was playing ball with the United States in our ongoing war on terror,
mm-hmm.
Baluchistan was...
In Waziristan.
Yes, was really not an issue as far as we were concerned. Now, we're suddenly expressing concern about the way they're being treated by the Pakistani government. Of course, tensions have been high there ever since, we went in and we killed Osama bin Laden inside Pakistani territory. There have been a number of drone strikes that have taken place inside Pakistan, some which people there feel were directed at civilians rather than at military targets or terrorist targets. And so passions are running somewhat high in Pakistan against the United States. Now suddenly we're starting to make noises that, well, you know, you're not treating those people there. We might just have a responsibility to protect those folks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, again, the territory in which the Baloch people live includes a good chunk of southeastern Iran, so it would be a very delicate thing there. But
you know what I find really interesting is that Parvez Musharraf, who sort of was our guy in Pakistan for a long time until he lost his job, was asked about this, about the idea of possible civil war in Baluchistan, and he said that's not going to happen. He said, simply not going to happen. He said that it's being inflated over here in the West in the news, and that it's only about 4% of the population that's even interested in getting out and of Pakistan. And he essentially says there's nothing to see here. Hmm. Now, I wonder why he's saying that if we're wanting to go in.
Hmm.
I don't know. This is the first. I've really not done a whole lot of reading on this, so I will defer to you. But in my very quick Google News search, I found former President Musharraf's comment.
Hmm. Well, it remains to be seen what happens here. This could be just a ploy to put pressure on the Pakistani government to go along mm-hmm. and play ball in exchange for some carrot down the road.
Yeah, we shouldn't mess with Pakistan. They are a nuclear country.
They are a nuclear power, yes. Of course, they're packed into an area there that where they border on two other nuclear powers, China and India. So things could get really dicey there in a big hurry if things start to fly. But I do note in this article, which I will link to at in the show notes, And bear in mind that this is coming from worldsocialism.org. So it's coming from a source that espouses a political view that which we disagree.
They do note
that going back to 2006, you know, going back almost 6 years, Ralph Peters, who's a military commentator, you might have seen him on Fox News, in an article published at Armed Forces Journal, redrew the map of the area, which featured a much larger Afghanistan, a much smaller Pakistan, and a free Baluchistan, which straddles the border between what is now Pakistan and Iran.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's worth considering, and that there are some members of the United States Congress, including Republicans Dana Rohrabacher of California, Louie Gohmert of Texas, and Steve King of Iowa, who appear to be supporters of this Baloch lobby looking for a free Baluchistan. And again, just watch for that phrase, responsibility to protect.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Well, you know, it's interesting that the Frontier Post today has an article that is titled The Baluchistan Quagmire.
Hmm.
That's a very odd word to use about a developing civil war that may only include 3 out of 160 tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Quagmire.
Yeah. So a well, just
boys
a,
and girls, that's your word for today.
Tangled web we weave.
Yeah.
So there's all of that. Meanwhile, other things going on. Of course, one of the big weapons in the war on terror is the drone. We've sort of become used to stories appearing in the news of drone strikes, Predator drones, Reaper drones going out and firing missiles.
Nuclear drones.
Yeah. Well, that was the story. Mm-hmm. I don't think, did we talk about that in the last show? I don't think so,
because I think that's only in the last few weeks that the article came out.
Yeah. The idea has been floated to, when it said, and this is from The Guardian in the UK, plans drawn up for nuclear drones. I thought, well, okay, nuclear missiles on drones, that seems
and they're going to be flying really high.
Yeah. But no, these are actually, they're talking about powering drones with nuclear power plants, which would allow them to fly over certain areas of the world for months on end without the need to refuel.
Oh, I see that.
Yeah. Blueprints of the drones have been developed at Sandia National Laboratories, which is our government's principal nuclear research facility. And a defense contractor, Northrop Grumman, designed to increase flying time of these drones from days to months. Now, what could possibly go wrong with a drone powered by a small thermonuclear reactor?
Well, let's see. Everything. Let's see. Someone could upload a virus to it.
It could crash
into something else.
That's exactly it. The concern is that this would crash into something, and then you would have a problem. Now, we know that there are nuclear-powered submarines, nuclear-powered aircraft carriers in the United States arsenal. Presumably, other nations have them as well.
Piloted by humans.
Yeah. And, you know, occasionally there are problems with those power plants, but very rarely. But we're not, putting them up in the air where gravity, which is a harsh mistress, mm-hmm. can exact a fearsome toll on one of those. Should something, a mechanical issue should happen. I mean, the propeller.
Well, let's just get sci-fi. Let's just go all sci-fi on this, and let's just talk about computers talking to each other and deciding that humans are infesting the world. I mean, I know that.
So we're talking about Skynet again here.
Yeah, we are. I know that sounds a little out there, but the truth is, it doesn't take a very big leap in our current computing power. Mm-hmm. This is according to what we are being told in the mainstream news, and not assuming that it's really 40 or 50 years ahead of what we're told, that artificial intelligence won't just decide that they know how to run things mm-hmm. better.
This is part of the discussion that's been ongoing regarding transhumanism for mm-hmm. The last couple of years.
This is the desire is to have computers that are so intelligent mm-hmm. that they can essentially design themselves. Computers designing computers. Mm-hmm.
And no need for humans getting in the way because we
need
are
Need I do the Battlestar Galactica theme?
Yeah. It's a theme that comes
Terminator.
Up in sci-fi. Yeah, Terminator, Battlestar Galactica mm-hmm. with the Cylons, the Cybermen in Doctor Who, mm-hmm. A couple of different Star Trek episodes, and so with Star Trek movie with mm-hmm. V'ger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be a drone that'll come back and it's, been reworked.
Yeah. So there's that aspect of it. But again, the simple, more banal threat is just that something powered by a nuclear power plant falls out of the sky and the shielding cracks open. And then you got a real mess. So.
Oh, that'll never happen. No, artificial intelligence taking over the world, killing all the humans, that could happen any day. But something just dropping out of the sky, oh, honey.
Yeah. Well, shifting gears and speaking of things dropping out of the sky, as again, we watch the clouds roll by outside and watch a line of storms heading across Missouri and towards Illinois. Story from Texas a couple of days ago where they had a freak thunderstorm that was so intense that it dropped, 4 feet of hail mm-hmm. in some spots?
Waist deep.
4 feet of hail.
Depending on how tall you are, it might be, shoulder deep.
Yeah.
I mean, little kids going out in that would be,
yes,
inundated.
Dachshund would if they,
dachshund, you know, gone.
Yeah,
early on.
These hailstones weren't that large. They're you know, the size of
quarter size
dimes. Yeah, I'm looking at a picture. A guy holding them up. They look to be about dime sized, but there were just so many that fell in a concentrated area that, and this is an area of Texas that's been under severe drought for a long time. So it was mixing with mud and rain runoff and creating like a giant mud smoothie across a U.S. highway there that took the better part of a day to clear. They had to get snowplows out to clear the roadway.
The weather is so odd. I mean, we had tornadoes in January.
Yeah. But any given year, you're going to find weird things. I remember back in 1990, and this is very clear to me because this tied to a former employer. I was terminated by long-distance phone call the day before Thanksgiving that year, and the following Monday, so bear in mind, this is late November, a tornado tore down the radio station's tower, and they were off the air for 4 months.
Well, that's the kind of thing that we were talking about this morning in church, saying, you know, when people do bad things to you, do you ever just kind of...
Yeah. Well, I must admit that when I heard about that story, I did cackle with snotty glee. Snotty glee, yes. But that was not the correct response, I know.
No, but it's a human response.
Right.
It's not a very good Christian response, but it's pretty common among us humans.
So anyway, Texas, they were singing Gang Gang, the Hail's All Here last week as that came down. And there are a large number of earth changes that are taking place, and one of them, of course, is the increase in the number of earthquakes that we're seeing on an annual basis. And there is concern with the price of oil now as high as it is that a production technique called fracking, which is hydrological.
Another Battlestar Galactica reference.
What is that exactly term? It's
fractional or fracture?
Hydraulic fracturing. Fracturing. It's a technique in which a driller injects wastewater and sand and chemicals down into an area of shale containing oil or petrochemicals, natural gas, in order to fracture the rock and cause it to release the hydrocarbons so that they can be more easily pumped to the surface. The price of oil is so high now that in areas where drilling new wells has not been profitable for quite some time, we're now hearing words like oil and boom in the same sentence. Here in Illinois, the southeast quadrant of Illinois, southwest Indiana, sit on top of a rather large deposit of oil, fairly deep. But it was being exploited up to 100 years ago. I understand the area is just south of here, about an hour south of where we are now. There were tent cities springing up because of the oil boom that was taking place in east central Illinois around the towns of Olney, Oblong, Robinson, Newton. In fact, there's a Marathon Oil refinery in Robinson. I think because of the oil that was being pumped out of the ground back in the day, and that refinery dates back, I think, about 80 years.
Isn't fracking going after natural gas, though?
Yeah. It is a... let's see. Is it... that's right, to break apart the rock and free natural gas trapped underground. So you're correct. Natural gas is also a very profitable commodity right now, especially because
so.
For consumers, natural gas is a lot cheaper fuel to burn than oil.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the prices are high enough that apparently guys who know what they're talking about, which does not include me...
Nor me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being raised in Chicago, you think nothing happens outside of, Joliet. That's Kankakee. That's about the edge of the universe. Rockford, maybe. Milwaukee to the north. There's really nothing that happens outside of that little sphere. And when you get down to the southern half of Illinois and you see all these pump jacks alongside the road, it's like, oh, oil here? Oh,
monkey out of nowhere.
But apparently leases for oil and natural gas rights, mineral rights on farmland in this part of Illinois are reaching near record highs. and companies that are connected to the oil field in this part of the country are doing very well right now, which is good for my employer because they tend to use a lot of steel. But it does mean that this technique, fracking, is now being discussed as a way to extract natural gas from underground here in Illinois, which has not been used in the past. And experts, geologists,
causing some earthquake.
Well, that's the thing. Seismologists, scientists connected to the U.S. Department of the Interior, scientists at the U.S. Geological Survey, rather, are saying that this technique of injecting that wastewater down into the ground may be increasing the frequency of earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
The state of Ohio issued a similar statement a couple of weeks ago that earthquakes were being recorded in places where they never have earthquakes, places like Youngstown. And they are drawing a link between the increased seismic activity and fracking.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
call me crazy. Look, I'm no expert in this field of science in any way, shape, or form. But it seems to me like when you start injecting things into crevices of the earth,
mm-hmm.
that you might just be causing the earth to start shaking. You're fracturing and perhaps even uncovering heretofore unknown seismic fields.
Mm-hmm. That's possible.
It's a silly thing to do.
There are
but the microquakes and the quakes in the Midwest have skyrocketed in number since mm-hmm. the fracking began.
Yeah. This is something to watch. There are those in the industry who, of course, say that there's no link between seismological activity and this particular practice. So, yeah, just 10 more minutes.
I know. I just thought I'd wave back.
We're doing the wave here. All we need is, you know,
I know, for
vendors.
Sam to do
yeah.
it.
But we will see more of this because the price of oil is high enough now that drilling in places where it's usually not as profitable to drill, it's usually easier, believe it or not, to get to the oil off the coast of Texas and Louisiana in the Gulf than it is to drill down through farmland here in Illinois and Indiana. But once it gets above, I've been told, above about $80 a barrel, it does become profitable to drill new wells, and there are companies here in Illinois that are investing millions of dollars into new drilling rigs to drill down over a mile. And again, fracking may be a part of the maybe one tool that these drillers
extraction
are
tool.
Using. Yeah, so we'll see, and I'm sure that the Geological Survey will be monitoring the things.
Assuming
here.
They're telling us everything that you know.
Sure.
Well, anyway.
And one of the other factors that they theorize anyway is that by injecting liquid down into these strata, you're actually sort of lubricating the different layers, and then allowing for
movement
plates
between plates.
Yeah, that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Okay, so call me crazy, also, but you said it's water and sand and chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they getting the water? The world is getting to the place where we're going to have a shortage of potable water, drinkable water anyway. Mm-hmm. So if this is rainwater that they're using that or some other sort of water that is incapable of being filtered in a way that becomes drinkable,
right.
You know, fine. But it seems to me that it's a waste of water because when that water is comes out the other end, I assume it goes into the ground and then comes out somehow, it's full of sand and chemicals.
Yeah, and then they've got to inject it back into the earth
and
to dispose
natural gas,
of it.
And natural gas, I don't know.
They,
yeah.
they have to inject it back into the earth to dispose of it.
Oh, so it's twice.
Yeah.
They inject it once to get the natural gas, and then they bury it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and they say that they use wastewater, but of course
she
then you've
rolls
got...
rolls her eyes.
Yeah, so... It is no doubt controversial.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I've already seen a report of a gathering of people to protest fracking at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale about 2-3 weeks ago. So
I think
there are people here who are aware of it and are
yeah.
starting to organize opposition to the practice.
Well, good for them. Really quickly, since we have less than 10 minutes left, I want to ask you about a story that we discussed very briefly before we started the show this afternoon. And I don't see it on, you know, this Facebook, the way the Facebook walls are done now,
yeah.
I lose stuff all the time. The story about the publicist.
Oh, yeah.
Who died?
Yeah.
Where did that go?
It should be right up there at the top.
Nope.
It's the very top left.
There it is. Yeah. It wasn't there a minute ago. I kid you not. It was not there.
Oh, interesting.
The top left was a different story. Okay.
Yeah. This is a story reported by therap.com, WRAP. And we've talked and speculated a little bit about some of the strange circumstances of various celebrity deaths, you know, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, and so on, without getting caught up in saying beyond a shadow of a doubt that that there were more sinister forces at work there. This is just kind of a weird story. A Hollywood publicist by the name of Michael Sands, who's probably best known as the guy who came up with the best or the worst dressed list, Mr. Blackwell's worst dressed list, as a marketing gimmick to promote Mr. Blackwell, who was a designer who was no longer considered cutting edge or cool in Hollywood. By publishing this annual worst dressed list, suddenly Mr. Blackwell is back on everyone's mind and mm-hmm. Back in demand. Michael Sands was at a nice upscale grocery store in the Los Angeles area, Century City, toward the end of March, and he was going through the deli section and took an offer of a sample of beef, and he choked on this sample. Now, you know, when you go through, you know, like the Sam's Club mm-hmm. or wherever, where they're handing out little samples.
Oh, on weekends, you can eat there.
Yeah, but they give you little teeny-weeny samples, typically, not really big. His son, Sands' son, said that he suffered from COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, so mm-hmm. he had a smaller than normal airway, and this piece stuck, and the Heimlich maneuver was unsuccessful. Paramedics, when they got there, did revive him. But he was put into an induced coma when he reached the hospital to contain or keep down the swelling of his mm-hmm. brain. This took place on March. What was the date here? It was toward the end of March. Yeah, of course, switch pages and you get a pop-up ad. March 24th. He died on April 6th, 13 days after the original incident.
13.
What's bizarre, though, about Michael Sands is that he claimed to be connected to the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
He was known in Hollywood for handing out trinkets with the FBI and CIA and U.S. Navy and Air Force logos on them. He claimed that he had been a part of the undercover operation to nab the terrorist, Abu Abbas, the Palestinian terrorist who was behind the hijacking of the cruise liner, the Achille Laurel, back in the 1980s. I mean, he claimed that he was trying to get this guy a book deal, offered him $1 million to come to a Baghdad bookstore for an interview, and U.S. Special Forces grabbed him.
You know, the reason I wanted to make sure we discussed this, or very briefly discussed it, so, you know, our listeners will make sure they read this, is because in the book that I've just finished reading, the Peter Lavenda book, Book 3, it's called The Manson Secret,
mm-hmm.
Book number 3 of the Sinister Forces trilogy. He talks a lot about the synchronicity involved in the evil that takes place here in the United States, how it seems odd that someone who's in Hollywood would die in a certain way at a certain time. And he, Lavenda, considers this a coincidence in the Jungian parlance. Synchronicity.
Okay. All things are connected.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There are no coincidences. It's the movie Signs.
Mm-hmm.
There are no coincidences. And you and I would say that there is a spiritual aspect behind the scenes, that things that seem odd and sort of out of place are all interconnected
mm-hmm.
because God is in control of everything. And nothing happens that he doesn't allow. Therefore, all things are connected, but not in the way Jung thought.
Exactly.
In the book, one of the things he talks about is when there was a cocaine dealer who was involved with a Hollywood producer, and I won't go into the names. I could, but I just won't. I just, if you want to read the book, I highly recommend it. And I will say this name because it's someone that most people listening, who are my age at least, will recognize. Desmond Wilson, Demond Wilson.
Demond Wilson, right.
Demond Wilson, who was the son on Sanford and Son, mm-hmm. was asked to follow two, frankly, assassins for the mob who were following this other person who was involved with the movie producer. Mm-hmm. And Demond Wilson was terrified. In fact, he lost the car that he was supposed to be following to protect him. He had a gun in the car. Demond Wilson, you wouldn't think, Sanford and Son, but he was this Hollywood person who was called upon to essentially do a dramatic intervention and help protect someone. He finally went to the restaurant all by himself, got there, and the person he was asked to protect was never showed up. Mm-hmm. Well, he was dead. That's why he never showed up. And he was found much later. This all has to do with the Process Church and the Son of Sam killings and on and on and on, synchronicity, and they all seem to go back to Ashland, Kentucky in one way or another. Talk about everything being connected. But I wanted to make sure we got that in, because who knows how this is really connected. And if he says he worked for the CIA, it would be interesting to see how his life dovetails in with so many others. And I'd love to see LaVenda do the connections because he has contacts that are amazing.
And he's an excellent researcher and a careful researcher.
Very careful to cite everything that he, you know, he doesn't make an allegation without some really good evidence.
Yeah. Well, it just struck us as kind of an odd story that this well-known publicist, for a reference that, you know, the younger, these kids today might understand, he also represented Kevin Federline, who was Britney Spears' ex-husband. At the time that the two of them were going through their real bitter custody battle over their children.
Is that when she
She was going through, right, exactly, going through all of that where she was in the...
In and out of rehab.
Yes, exactly. So that was...
Being fine-tuned.
One of his clients. He also represented a number of plastic surgeons and Hollywood private eyes and other folks in Hollywood who seemed to be fairly well
connected.
Arabella
Churchill, the granddaughter of Sir Winston Churchill.
Yeah.
Talk about synchronicity.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Michael Sands, look him up. I'll put a link. Well, you'll find that story linked at facebook.com/PID News. And this weekend on A View from the Bunker, talked to Keith Giles, spoke with him once before, and looking forward to talking to him about his new ebook called The Power of Weakness.
That is a great title.
It is, and I think it's counterintuitive. You know, Jesus said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. You know, blessed are the poor in spirit, et cetera, and so on. And, you know, he, in the introduction...
Told us to turn the other cheek.
Yeah, and to love our enemies.
Yes.
So in the introduction to the ebook, he says, most of us seem to live according to an abridged version of the Beatitudes. You know, blessed are the rich and handsome, you know. And almost as though we put a firewall between the word of God that we hear on Sunday mornings and how we actually live our lives. Well, someday in that great by and by, we'll live according to all of these things. But, you know, to get by in the here and now, you got to play by a different set of rules.
If you walk into your kitchen, make sure you have your glasses on.
So that'll be up at vftb.net this weekend. And next weekend, talk to Frank Thayer, who is co-author of a new book about the Aztec incident, which is the lesser known UFO incident from 1947, New Mexico.
Oh, I can't wait to listen to that. Frank Thayer is someone we have known for years. And he's an amazing researcher. In fact, is he head of the journalism department?
Yes, he is at New Mexico State University.
Yes, I think so.
New Mexico State. So, yeah, that should be really interesting. So you want homework in advance to be prepared. Look up the Aztec incident, and that will be the topic for next time on A View from the Bunker. Till then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content copyright Gilbert House and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon.